This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents My Unexpected Forever by Heidi McLaughlin, narrated by Nelson Hobbs and Stephanie Rose. Chapter 1. Harrison. The music sheet doesn't make any sense. I've been over it 100 times or more, and it's still all a blur. I know the lyrics and the beat, but everything I put down is a mess. Liam is expecting something from me by the time band practice starts in an hour, and I'm not going to be able to deliver. My mind is consumed with thoughts of love and lust, and there isn't jack shit I can do about it. I rip my earbuds out and move away from my computer. I can't do this. Not today. Not after seeing her last night. I hate that I can't tell her how I feel. I hate that when another man looks at her, I feel nothing but murderous rage. I want to be the only one looking at her. I'm a fool to think she wants me, with my full-sleeved tattoos and rocker lifestyle. I know I can offer her more than those other men. A stable home, financial security, and a man who will worship and kiss the ground that she walks on. But I'm not the one you can take home to Mom, or to the school PTA meetings without being stared at. I know she doesn't want that. Enough people stare at her now. I pull out a clean sheet of paper and write down more lyrics. More touchy-feely shit that I wish I could tell her. Instead, I show up almost daily with something to offer her. Coffee, lunch, or a free lawn mowing job. Because I can't, for the life of me, get it through my head that I'm nothing more than just a friend to her. And that's all I'll ever be. I write down 6 words before tearing the paper up. I know why Liam tasked me with putting the music down for these songs, but they're mine. I hadn't planned on sharing them with the band. I think he's trying to get back at me for all those things I said about him falling in love when he returned home for his buddy's funeral. Now that it's my turn, he's sitting back and laughing his ass off. I had to write some heavy shit, the head-pounding, scream-your-lungs-out shit that I sometimes think about. Either way, we need new songs, and we've all been taxed with producing something. But no, that isn't who we are. We've skyrocketed with Liam's heartfelt ballads and rocking personal stories that make women fall in love with us. They all think we're tortured souls and in need of companionship. Little do they know that Liam has only written about one woman. Hell, I didn't even know about it. Until he upped and left Los Angeles for the quiet, mundane life of Beaumont. I can't blame him. I've done the same thing. This is the best place to raise Quinn. He'll go to school with Noah, and when Liam and I have a gig, Josie will take care of him. She's really filled the role of mother for Quinn, and for that, I will forever be thankful to her. That, and she gave my best friend a whole new life, and we've since had a string of #1 hits... putting us back at the top of the charts. Now, if I could just get the one I'm infatuated with to just look in my direction. I'm firmly stuck in the friend category, though, and I don't know how to get out of it. I'm afraid to tell her how I feel because the look on her face will break me. I know she doesn't want me the way I want her, and I'd rather be her friend than not have her in my life at all. I put my earbuds back in to try this one more time. I picture the things I want to do to her, the way I want to hold her, how I want to be the one she comes home to at night, be the one that she turns to when she needs consoling on the anniversary of her husband's death. I want to be the one that the twins need when someone dares to break their hearts. Imagining a life with her is as easy as breathing. I just have to find a way to make it happen without putting too much pressure on her. I hope that time is my friend, and that someday she'll look in my direction and realize I'm someone she can trust to take care of her. That she'll know I'd never hurt her or the girls. That she will see me for me, and know that Quinn and I would fit perfectly into her life. I push away from the desk and head to my drums, bringing my laptop with me. I need to pound out some anger and frustration, and maybe something will transpire that is usable. I close my eyes and let my sticks guide me. My beat starts off hard and steady. I'm beating the drums in front of me, releasing this pent-up energy. Her face flashes before my eyes, her voice inside my head. I instantly calm down and work out a rhythm. I hit record on my laptop and play the sound through. It's slow, smooth, definitely something Liam and I can work on. Jimmy and Tyler knock on the window, alerting me that they're here. Tyler is our new soundboard guru, and he's been spending time with Jimmy in Los Angeles for the past week, getting to know him. I stop the recording and take off my headphones to open the door for them. When I do, she's coming down the stairs, talking on her cell phone. Her eyes meet mine briefly. I can't tell you if I'm smiling or not, showing any emotion whatsoever. Her presence alone makes me turn into a fool. It's times like this that I'm thankful she works for us. It gives me every conceivable excuse to be near her. It's so easy to fake a conversation about music and what gig we have coming up, or what our deadlines are. The funny thing is, I know all of this, but act as if I've forgotten or can't find my phone to look it up. Jimmy, or JD as we call him, as he tells us it suits his rock star lifestyle, slaps me on the shoulder as he passes. He's chuckling and muttering something to himself. Liam is trudging down the stairs before I can shut the door and turn on the light to let Caitlin and Josie know we are working. I hate the way Liam looks in the morning. No, I shouldn't say that. I'm happy for him. He's with the one woman he loves, and they are happy. Sickeningly happy. He's paid his dues and deserves this. The pride I see in his eyes when he looks at his son is the same way I am when I look at Quinn. They are the best of us, no matter how much we screw up. "JD, my man," Liam says as they man-hug. "I didn't hear you come in."
"Linda let me in. Tell me, how much did you have to pay her to leave her cushy job at the hotel to come here to take care of your sorry ass?"
Liam laughs. He made it a few months before he started looking for a housekeeper. He didn't want Josie having to take care of the house by herself, so he asked his former maid Linda to move to Beaumont. He's in the process of building her a nice little house behind his, and he bought her a car. "Let's get to work. Caitlin is working on booking some new bars that she heard about, so we need to work out the kinks." Liam straps his guitar on and starts tuning. "I worked this out before you guys got here." I move over the laptop and press play, watching JD and Liam as they listen to the melody. Liam smiles and looks over to the lyrics we've been working on. JD moves to the keyboard and hits a few keys, and I add in the beat for my drums. Liam signals to Tyler to start recording. He strums his guitar and sings into the microphone as JD and I play along with him. When I look up, Caitlin is watching me. Not us, but me, before she turns and is out of sight. For one brief moment, I have a sliver of hope that she might feel the same way.
Chapter 2. Caitlin. I set the phone down, resting my head in my hands. I know I can do this. I just have to convince myself that Liam didn't make a mistake in hiring me. What was I thinking when I opened my mouth at Christmas, saying I could be their manager? I fear I've bitten off more than I can chew. But Liam has confidence in me, even if I'm only booking 4225 West in small bars. They laugh, the bar owners, when I call to book a gig. They ask if I'm joking, and I assure them that I'm not. I tell them repeatedly that the band is trying a different angle, more family-friendly, and want to give back to the fans that have made them so popular. Still, I can hear the humor in their voices when they agree to a booking and the small fee is figured out. What they don't understand is that with a bit of advertising, they will clean house at the end of the night. 4225 West isn't asking for a large percentage. They just want to play, and want to do it without the bright lights shining in their faces. My phone rings, startling me. I almost spill my coffee when I reach for the handset. My hand steadies the cup before there's a mess everywhere. I don't know where all these jitters are coming from. Okay. Yes, I do. I know exactly what, or who, is setting me on edge. I just choose to ignore it. I can't focus on my children and career with the distractions that face me daily. I need to get through, I don't know what. He's my boss. That's what I keep telling myself, whether he's actually the one who signs my check or not. I work for him. I pick up the phone on the fourth ring, clearing my throat and taking a deep breath before saying hello. Is this Caitlin Powell? It is, I say, pulling my pad of paper closer to me to take notes. This is Krista Johnson, and I represent an artist known as Devon. He's an up-and-coming artist that we recently signed. His debut single releases next month, and we're interested in getting him some attention. I'm calling to see if 4225 West would be willing to work a small tour with him. What type of music? He sounds more hip-hop with a name like Devon. I write down his name and scribble research next to it. I haven't heard of him, but that doesn't mean anything. When it comes to music, I'm pretty much in the clouds. You'd think, right? Devon is actually blues with a rock vibe. It's very funky with a kick. We think that with the success of 4225 West, Devon will not only gain some fans, but will learn from the veterans and how they run a tour. Veterans? I know I'm not a veteran when it comes to tours, but the guys are. Me? I'm just the person behind the desk trying to find places willing to pay them. Do you have venues set up? This is important. How much work am I going to have to do? About 15, but we'd like 30. I can arrange the remaining venues. This will be good experience for me. Where are you looking to tour? Ideally, we'd like to hit the younger crowds. So Miami, New York City, Seattle. And when would you like to start? We're hoping for August. August? 1 month before school starts. Not that I need to be on tour with the guys, even though Liam will want me there. I'm sure Josie and Noah would go, and Harrison would probably take Quinn as well. The band has a new CD coming out, and this would probably be a huge benefit for them. 30 stops. Is that enough? August really doesn't work for us. What about July, and we'll tour for 45 days? I throw that number out there, hoping I'm doing the right thing. Liam has given me full rein to do whatever I see fit, but I still question everything. He rolls his eyes most of the time or tells me to ask Harrison, and that's really not going to happen. We can do that. Great. Krista and I spend the next hour on the phone hashing out the details. I take copious notes, and she promises to email the contacts from the venues she's already booked. We agree that I will take the lead, as 4225 West will be the headliner. I look out my window to see if the red studio light is still on. It's not. I gather my notepad and pen and head out to the studio. The guys are standing around Tyler, laughing. This is good. This means they've recorded something they like and are happy. I like happy. Liam kisses me on the cheek when I walk up to him. He puts his arm around me, pulling me closer. He's been like this since he moved back. I'm not complaining. I love him like a brother, and he's been there for us, helping out more than I could ever thank him for.
Caitlin, did you meet Tyler?
Liam asks as he points to Tyler, who nods. Yes, Jimmy brought him in to fill out his paperwork. Did you guys get something recorded?
No,
Harrison says sharply. I look at him and immediately wish I hadn't. He's staring at me, or Liam's hand, which is still resting on my shoulder. I'm not quite sure. Either way, his piercing green eyes are looking at me. His expression is stoic, almost hard. Well, listen, I say. Liam drops his arms and moves so he's standing in front of me, leaving just enough space for the other guys to hear what I'm saying. We're talking business now. He's being serious. This, Liam, sometimes scares me. I got off the phone with a manager whose client is releasing a CD. His name is Devon.
Is he a rapper?
Harrison asks, interrupting my spiel. I don't know why he does that, but it makes me want to slap my hand over his mouth. I shake my head and continue. Devon is a blues artist with a bit of a rock kick. They're looking to build his fan base and asked if we're interested in a tour. I figured with the CD about to come out, we could use the publicity. So we're doing a 45-city tour starting in July. You guys will be back in time for the kids to start school.
You guys?
Jimmy questions. Yes, I'll stay here.
No, you'll be coming with us,
Liam says.
Book a tour bus. Harrison can help. He has some connections and knows what we'll want. This will be fun.
Harrison and I stare at each other. The black beanie that he always wears is mocking my imagination of what his hair looks like. I've only seen him without his hat through pictures, never in person. I'm the first one to look away because I can't take the intense way he looks at me. Or maybe it's because I can't understand the way I look at him. Or the way I want to know more about him. Liam kisses me on the cheek before heading upstairs. He declares it's lunchtime before I have a chance to say anything. Jimmy and Tyler move faster than I've ever seen them before, leaving me with Harrison.
Should we go into your office?
I look up quickly, expecting him to smile or change his expression. But he doesn't. I remind myself that this is my job, and he has the answers I need to get my job done. And as much as I don't want to sit in my office with him while he leans over me, it has to be done. I nod and lead the way. I count the steps to my office and then to my desk. 20, 21, 22. He pulls out my chair. I make the mistake of looking at him as I sit down. The slight turn of his lip tells me that he's happy to be here. He beat me into my office, and I don't know how. Was I really walking that slowly? He pushes in my chair slightly and leans over me. I try not to breathe in his cologne. I don't want to know what he wears, but he smells good. I lean away, closer to my screen, and he leans in, too. I wonder if he knows what he's doing to me. Doesn't he know I'm trying to avoid him? That we can never be anything? Harrison tells me what site to bring up, and I do. Except my fingers aren't working and I have to type the web address repeatedly. He moves his fingers over mine. I pull them back instantly, afraid for him to touch me. My hands rest in my lap.
Sorry, I was just trying to help.
I nod and realize how stupid I'm being. We can be friends, right? He brings up the website and walks me through how to order a custom charter. He says that they've used this company before, and to call and ask for Larry. He'll make sure we get what we need, and in time. I write down what he tells me. And he laughs. I turn slightly, but think twice and focus on my paper. I think I can take it from here.
Caitlin.
The sound of his voice, the way he says my name, low and sweet with just enough mystery, makes me look up at him, causing me to mentally kick myself.
It's lunchtime, and Linda doesn't like to leave out food for too long.
He's right. I slide my chair back. He moves one step back, giving me some space. I was hoping I could follow him upstairs, but he doesn't move or lead the way. He waits for me. I feel stupid for feeling like this, but it's too soon after Mason. In fact, nothing will ever happen with Harrison. I know how he feels, but it just can't. Not only because I love Mason, but because he's not my type. I would never date a man who is covered in tattoos, wears a beanie and shorts all the time. He's the quintessential rocker and doesn't fit my life. I don't care that the way he looks at me makes me feel wanted. I don't care that the way he looks at me makes me feel desired. I don't care that the way he smells makes me want to crawl into his skin until I'm enveloped in his scent. I don't care because he's not Mason.
Chapter 3. Harrison. I pick up a sleeping Quinn from Liam's guest bedroom. I left him here early this morning after we finished loading the tour bus. It didn't make much sense to wake him just to bring him back a few hours later. He's used to this life, the constant touring, late nights, and hotel food. He's had a nanny before, but she traveled with us. I didn't want to be away from him for more than a day. Caitlin offered to stay home, but Liam was adamant that she come with us. Said she needed to learn the ropes. She balked, but when he tossed out words like family vacation and Disney World, she agreed. Now I can't get the vision of Caitlin in a bikini out of my mind. I have a hard enough time, literally, when she's dressed in her work clothes. Always a skirt. The length changes, but one only notices that if they are paying attention. And I am. All the time. My imagination is running wild, and I have to fight every urge I have to reach out and touch her. To feel just the smallest amount of her skin against mine. The casual brushes of my hand against hers, or when I lean in and her hair tickles my chin. Any moment I can steal to tide me over until the next time. The only problem is, there aren't enough moments. She avoids me whenever possible. Even when I catch her looking, she averts her eyes the moment they meet mine. Why does she do that? I get that she's still hurting over her husband. I'm not a complete ass to think she's over him. But I see the way she looks at me, the way she fumbles over the smallest things when I'm near her. If she doesn't like me, I shouldn't affect her in this way. Quinn wakes as soon as I set him in his bunk. He smiles before rolling over. I suppose he's too big for me to carry, but in my eyes, he's still my baby. He's on the bottom with Noah, taking the top bunk. Noah's excited to be going on tour, and I can't really blame him. He spent all of last night asking Quinn questions about the different hotels, the concerts, and what he does when I'm not on stage. Quinn was a sport and filled him in, even telling him which foods to avoid when on the road. I know this tour is going to be different from before. For one thing, we all have families, aside from JD and Tyler. I can see most of our free time will be spent sitting poolside while the women shop. I step off the bus just as Caitlin pulls into the driveway. I don't hesitate. I jog to her car just as she opens the back seat to pull out one of the twins. The only way I can tell them apart is by the way they are dressed. I go around to the other side and open the back door. Peyton is out cold in her booster seat, her football tucked under her arm. I'm not sure how sleeping with a football can be comfortable, but it was her dad's, so I understand. I look over at Caitlin, who stops unbuckling L when I reach for Peyton's buckle. I smile at her because, frankly, I don't know what else to do when it comes to her. She doesn't smile or show any type of recognition whatsoever. To say I'm confused is an understatement. If I was Liam, she would have smiled, winked, and probably blew him a damn kiss as a thank you. But not me. I get nothing but a blank stare. And that is something I want to change. I maneuver the seatbelt around Peyton's head and let her fall into my arms. She doesn't wake when I pick her up, and I'm careful to make sure she doesn't drop her football. I remember what it was like when Quinn was little, and he'd lose his blanket. I've been on the receiving end of night terrors and endless tears, and Peyton doesn't need that right now, and neither does Caitlin. With Peyton in my arms, I wait for Caitlin to pick up Elle. I can hear Caitlin grunt as she lifts her, and I wish I would have taken Peyton to the bus and come back for Elle. But I have a feeling Caitlin is used to doing things on her own now. It can't be easy being a single mom of twins, especially when they still need you so much. As soon as she has Elle in her arms, I lead us to the bus. It's dark, but I know my way around. The door to the girls' bunk room is open. I set Peyton down on the bottom, putting her at one end of the bed and stepping aside to let Caitlin bring Elle in. The space is small on the bus, and I use this to my advantage. When Caitlin brushes against me, I have to fight every urge to take Elle out of her hands and show Caitlin what my room looks like. But I don't get that opportunity because she steps away. Her head drops, turning slightly as she looks at me. I pull my arm back, away from hers, and step out of the room. I need to get off this bus. Instead, I sit and lean my head back, closing my eyes. I don't know how I'm going to be next to her for such a long time. We are going to be in the same space, day after day and night after night, never apart unless we have different errands to run. Our friends are together, keeping us together. Sometimes I wonder why I moved to Beaumont. Was it because of the instant connection I felt with her on the first night we met? I tell myself it wasn't, that moving here was for Quinn and the band, and to have an easier life, that having her here is just an added bonus. When I hear her shut the girl's door, I pull my beanie down. I know she's standing next to me. I'm sulking like a child, a habit I've picked up from Quinn. He loves to sit on our recliner and pull his hat over his eyes, ignoring me until I give in. I always give in. I don't want her to see the confusion in my eyes, the desperation I hold for her. I don't want her to know she has me by the balls and can string me along like a puppet. I want to move my hat, but she'll move as soon as I do, so I stay still and pretend to sleep, just so she'll stand there longer. I feel the chair move as she's leaning over it, trying to figure out if I'm truly asleep or not. Her breathing is normal, in and out. Her perfume is strong. I know she put it on before she came here. If I was standing behind her, I'd breathe in deeply just so I can smell her coconut and lime shampoo, a scent that I now love because it reminds me of her.
What are you doing?
It's Josie. I know I should show them I'm awake, but I'm curious about what they are going to say. I've officially become the lowest form of a man. I should be ashamed of myself. I'm not. I'm evil and desperate for a sign on how to get through to her.
I was just putting the girls in their bunk. And now? Now,
I'm trying to slow down my breathing, but the fact that Caitlin is stumbling over her words excites me. Do I do this to her?
You know, it's okay to date. Mason would want you to move on.
I want to jump up and kiss Josie right now. I do. Even if it means Liam would kick my ass, it'd be worth it.
It's too early. It's been a year. No, it hasn't. It's been 10 months. That's 2 months shy of a year. Besides, you waited for 3 when Liam left you.
Josie sets something down and moves closer. At least I think she does.
Liam left, Caitlin. He didn't die. I waited because I prayed he was coming back. There's a difference. You don't know what you're talking about.
Silence follows. Now would be a good time to let them know I'm awake, but I'm far too chicken to do that. I'm curious if they are having a staring contest like kids do in elementary school. You know the type that if you smile first, you lose. I never lost. Probably because I was never invited to play. But I watched from a distance and wondered how people, especially kids, could hold a straight face for so long. Hey, the bus doesn't pack itself. Oh, thank God Liam is here. He'll get the ladies moving and out of the way so I can wake up.
Sorry, we were just talking.
I hear lips smacking against each other and cringe internally. Liam is a lucky-ass bastard.
I just need to grab our luggage and we'll be ready to go. God damn it. I forgot about her luggage.
Instead of helping her, I'm sitting in his chair feeling sorry for my rejected ass. What the hell is wrong with me? You can wake up now. They're outside. Busted. I lift my beanie and look at Liam. He's shaking his head with a smirk plastered to his face. He forgets that I'm older than him.
What the hell are you doing?
He asks in a hushed tone. Clearly feeling sorry for myself, I say, rubbing my hands over my face. I readjust my beanie and stand.
She'll come around.
I shake my head. I honestly don't think she will. I'm not her type. I've seen the way she looks at you, and she talks to Josie about you. If you weren't getting under her skin, she wouldn't freak out every time I tell her she needs to work with you.
You do that shit on purpose?
Of course I do. You're both my best friends, and I want to see you happy. I think you'll make her extremely happy. She just needs to open her eyes. Liam slaps me on the back and heads off the bus. I follow and see Caitlin at her car, her arms full. I walk back over, my hands in my pockets, stopping in front of her. Can I help? She looks at me. Her lips turn upward slightly, but it's enough for me. I reach for her bags, loading them onto my arms, and take her stuff to the bus. I'm going to be a gentleman this time, though. I leave her bag on the chair and quietly put the girls' bags on their top bunk. When I close their door, she's standing there close enough to touch. She looks up at me. Her eyes move over my face, down my arms, and back again. I can't tell if she's happy or not. She raises her hand. I hold my breath, anxious for what she's about to do. Her eyes move back and forth over mine, questioningly. I want to nod or tell her yes, that she can touch me. But I'm afraid to speak. She drops her hand all too soon for my liking.
Thank you, Harrison.
I swallow hard at the way my name rolls off her tongue. You're welcome, Caitlin. I turn and walk into my small room and throw myself onto the bed and will the instant hard-on away. This is going to be a long-ass tour.
Chapter 4. Caitlin. Mason, how did you get here?
What do you mean? I walked.
Is it a long walk?
What are you talking about? I walk from school to home all the time.
But you're...
I'm what? What's going on, Caitlin? Why are you moving away from me?
I look at the distance between the both of us and move closer. He extends his arm, his hand reaching for mine. My reaction is automatic, like I've done this a million times. I have. For as long as I can remember, I've always been holding his hand. My palm slips into his. He holds my hand tightly. I look down at them. Our wedding rings shine as they reflect off the sun. Sun? I thought we were inside. I look around. Flowers and wheat surround us. We weren't here before. Mason wraps his arm around me, pressing his lips to my ear. I hold him there, afraid to let go.
It's time, Caitlin.
I'm afraid to know the answer, so I don't ask. Stay. Mason pulls back and smiles. I've missed him so much. The girls will be happy to know he's back, that he's come back to us, and everything has just been a nightmare. He pulls my hand to his mouth and kisses my wedding band and engagement ring.
I'll love you no matter what.
He's gone, just like that. Mason, come back. Please. I can't do this without you. I run, looking for wherever he went. I look down. Everything is black. I'm barefoot and bleeding.
Caitlin?
I jump when he shakes my arm. I know who it is by his voice. I sit up, adjusting the book I was reading in my lap. I move my matted hair away from my face. I can't believe he's standing next to me, staring. I'm a mess. He hands me a tissue. I look at him questioningly.
You were crying.
I take the tissue from his hand and wipe my eyes. I haven't dreamt of Mason in months, and never like this. They've always been about the accident and how it plays out in my mind. This dream, it means something else. But what? Thank you, I say, clearing my throat. He stands and nods, heading back to the chair he was sitting in until he woke me. I look out of the window, the passing fields flying by as we travel down the highway. I don't know where we are, but all I can see is a random farmhouse every now and again. Harrison clears his throat loudly. My knee-jerker reaction is to look over. He rubs his hand over his black beanie. It slides back and forth slightly. I watch intently, waiting for the tiniest hint of his hair. I wish he'd take the hat off, but he never does. If I had any nerve, I'd rip the sucker from his head and run, burn the thing when he's not looking. The beanie moves only inches, nothing telling. He glances over, catching me staring. I can't look away, even though I should. I look over my shoulder for anyone to rescue me. There's no one. I'm alone with him. I've known this man for months. We've had dinner, worked together almost daily. When we aren't working, we are around each other. So why, for the love of God, could I not sit in the same general vicinity without needing someone else in the room? I'm a professional. He's a professional. We can be adults, right? I turn back, catching his eye. He shakes his head, turns and looks out the window. I open my mouth to say something, anything, but nothing comes out. I don't understand why I can't talk to him. It makes no sense, this way I'm acting toward him. I'm sure he's a decent human being, regardless of the tattoos on his arms. It's not just his arms, though. His leg, too. He has something on his calf, but unless I bend down to look or ask him, I'll never know what it is.
I could drop a pen the next time I'm standing near him and get a good look. How long does it take to pick up a pen and mentally take a picture? Longer than I have, because he's always aware of me. It's like he's a magnet and I'm the piece of metal he wants to attach to. Which is just silly because magnets are attracted to other magnets, and I'm not a magnet. When he gets up, I jump, dropping the book I have resting in my lap. My gaze follows him down the aisle. He enters the girls' room, and before I can get up and find out what the hell he's doing in there, he's out and holding Elle in his hands. She's clinging to him, her arms wrapped tightly around his neck, her face squished into the front of his shirt. He stops in front of me.
She was crying.
I look from him to my daughter and down the aisle. He heard her crying, but I didn't. What does that make me? I reach for her, but she clings to him. She whimpers lightly, which breaks my heart. She's upset and would rather be comforted by him than me. I don't get it.
I can hold her for a while until she's asleep again,
he offers. His voice is incredibly soft and caring. I nod, even though it pains me to do so. She needs her mother, not him. I'm the one who takes care of the girls. Me. Yet it looks like Harrison has been holding her from the day she was born. Watching him sit down with her, he moves with such care and ease. He reclines his chair, nestling Elle across his chest. I get up and cover them both with my blanket. He smiles so softly, as if this gesture was the nicest thing anyone has ever done for him. He closes his eyes, his arms wrapped tightly around my baby. I wonder if he knows that he's holding half my life in his hands. I pull her hair away from her face and feel her forehead, testing for a fever. Maybe the driving is getting to her, making her sick. This is their first road trip, unlike Quinn, who has done this many times. The girls have never gone anywhere.
She feels fine. Must have been a bad dream.
Harrison says this without opening his eyes. I hate to admit it, but he's a natural. All I can do is step away and watch him keep the demons at bay.
Do you think we should wake them?
The sound of young voices, those of the other children, rang in my ear. I open my eyes slowly. Six pairs of eyes stare back at me. One set, in particular, has her arms crossed over her chest. She's without her football, and I wonder if, for one moment, she realizes she's not holding it. I refuse to call attention to that fact. Maybe she needed this trip more than the rest of us. I stretch and quickly surmise that sleeping in a chair is painful. I remember why I was sleeping here, and look over to see Harrison and Elle still covered and sound asleep. She looks like she hasn't moved an inch, and by the looks of his arms, he has a death grip on her.
Do you know if we are stopping soon?
Quinn asks. I haven't seen much of him since we took off. He and Noah have spent a majority of their time in Liam and Josie's room playing video games. I sound as if I have a frog in my throat, which makes them all laugh. I don't know, but I'll find out. I'm sure you guys are hungry. Just think, after the first stop, we'll be staying in hotels most of the time.
Yes!
Quinn fist pumps.
You guys, the hotels are so awesome, and they bring you all the food you want. My dad doesn't care if I jump on the bed, either.
Yes, I do. I just never catch you doing it.
Quinn's head whips around. I'm not sure if he's in trouble or not. Harrison winks at him, causing Quinn to smile so wide he shows his missing teeth.
How do you wake her up?
Like this.
Before I can say anything, Peyton slaps Elle so hard that she starts crying. Harrison stands and moves Elle away from Peyton's fury. I pull Peyton aside.
What is wrong with you?
I'm trying to look at Peyton, but can't take my eyes off of Harrison and Elle. He's holding her, rubbing her back where her sister hit her. She crosses her arms and looks away.
What's going on out here? You'd think we were traveling with a zoo,
Liam says. He and Josie join our early morning circus. Josie takes Elle from Harrison, who doesn't look happy. Liam ruffles Noah and Quinn's hair all while Peyton glares at me. I take her hand in mine and walk her down the aisle to my small bunk room. Whoever said traveling by tour bus was easy is so mistaken. Our rooms are barely wide enough to fit a twin bed, and one of our bunks has two grown men in it.
What's going on, Peyton? Why did you hit your sister? I felt like it.
That's not a good enough answer, and you know it's not okay to hit.
Elle hits me.
Peyton.
No. You always take her side. She hits me all the time, and you never do anything about it because she's your favorite, and I was Daddy's favorite, and he's gone, so I have no one.
She yells at the top of her lungs, loud enough that everyone on the bus hears her. She has tears running down her face. I reach for her, but she hits my hand. She doesn't want me to touch her. The door opens. Liam is standing there. He looks at me and then to Peyton. He picks her up and holds her in his arms. A moment later, his door shuts. I step out and try to listen, but he's whispering to her. I can hear her crying, and I can't do anything about it. I can't comfort either of my children. Josie wraps her arms around me, holding me close.
We're stopping soon. Everyone is just cramped and not used to being cooped up for so long. She'll be fine.
What if she's not?
Then we'll figure it out and go from there.
Maybe the girls need to see a therapist or something when we get back.
They might want to talk to someone who isn't their mom.
Elle had a nightmare last night. I didn't even hear her crying. Harrison did. He went and got her, and when I tried to take her, she wouldn't let go of him. He fell asleep in the chair with my baby wrapped in his arms, and all I could do was sit there and watch another man hold Mason's daughter. Josie pulls back and looks at me, her hands resting gently on my cheeks.
Mason would approve of Harrison, Caitlin. You should give him a chance.
She walks away, not waiting for an answer. But I give her one anyway.
I can't.
Chapter 5. Harrison. I have my routine on the day of a show. It starts with a run at the nearest park, away from the hotel and the constant pampering. This was always frowned upon by Sam, but it helped me keep a clear head. She was always worried I'd bring back some groupie. The way I saw it, if they could keep up with me, they deserved to come back and hang out. After my run, I seek out a local coffee shop and grab a cup and walk back to the hotel. Breakfast follows, then a shower before heading to the venue for rehearsal. A very mundane routine when you think about it. As I wake in the comfort of a down comforter and Egyptian cotton sheets, with a snoring Quinn beside me, I know my routine can stay the same. I can get up and do the same things I've done over and over again, or I can change. The question is, how much do I need to change before she notices me for me? I see the way she looks at my tattoos. She definitely doesn't look at Liam like that. Just me. I don't know why, but I want to change it. I had planned to talk to her last night, when we pulled in. Thought about calling her down to the hot tub with some excuse, but nothing I came up with was plausible. I almost stooped as low as bringing Josie into my devious plan, but I knew I was asking for trouble. Instead, I stood outside my door and watched her open hers. She looked at me briefly before the heavy door separated us, the loud clank sealing my fate yet again. I stare up at the ceiling, wondering if I could count the tiny specks before Quinn wakes up and demands breakfast. The problem with this logic is that my eyes blur before I can even get past 5. Chalk up another failure. I throw the blankets off and head to the shower. I should get back into my old habits. Josie could watch Quinn, or the maid on the floor could listen for him if something was wrong. He's old enough to hang out in the room by himself for an hour, and he has a cell phone. A simple text from me saying I'm running wouldn't make him freak out, although waking up and realizing I'm not here would. The last thing I want is for him to be upset, or for Caitlin to find out I left him alone. That's not the image I need her to have of me. I step into the shower and turn on the water. The cold pounds against my skin. I stand there taking the punishment. For what? I don't know. Maybe this is my consequence for lusting after a woman who clearly doesn't want me. Maybe those hints that I'm seeing are just my clouded vision and demented mind at work. She probably throws daggers at me every time I turn around. I move further under the spray as the water warms up. Lathering up the soap, I scrub my body. I find a bare spot on my arm and think about setting up an appointment for some ink. A vision of Caitlin flashes before my eyes, bare-skinned, with her dark hair falling over her shoulders. She's standing there, her hand tracing her hip. There's ink, a delicate design of lilies spreading across her hip to her back. If the thought of her having one arouses me, I don't know what I'd do if she ever got one. I'd pass out if I were allowed to see it. I'd die if I were allowed to touch it. When I walk back into the room, Quinn is awake and flipping through the channels. He smiles at me before turning back to the television. He's going to be 8 soon, and starting 3rd grade. I can't believe at one time I used to hold him while he slept. Now he's growing so much, I can't keep up. Want to watch cartoons? Quinn pats the spot next to him on the bed. He winks at me before he starts laughing. I can't help but laugh. Not at him, but with him. He makes everything better in my life. I take the spot next to him, putting my arm around him. He cozies up against my chest. I rest my head on top of his and watch his morning shows. Since moving to Beaumont, he's adjusted so well. I'm sure he misses his tutor, but I like the idea of him getting on the bus every morning and sitting in a classroom. I don't know what it's like to make him a lunch and help him put his backpack together. He needs to be with kids his age, and not depend on me or the television for entertainment. I like the relationship he's developed with Noah, who has taken sort of a big brother role with Quinn. If I didn't know better, I'd say things are looking up for us, except for me in the love department. Seems I'm jonesing after someone that doesn't want to have anything to do with me. I startle awake at the sound of knocking. My sorry ass saunters to the door. I'm not even sure what time it is, but the sun is blazing through the windows in my front room. I should remember to shut those before I go to bed. The knocking comes again, stronger this time. I rub my head, pulling at my hair. I need a haircut. It's getting too long. "I'm coming!" I yell out when the offender knocks again. I undo the chain and deadbolt. You can never be too safe in Los Angeles. I open the door to a nice-looking little package. She's tall and skinny, her hair pulled back in a tight ponytail. My eyes drift down, her eyes hiding behind dark glasses. Her lips are painted a dark red, and I wonder how long it would take me to get that nasty crap off them. She's wearing a tight black T-shirt with 4225 West on the front. Lovely. I've opened the door for a groupie. Sam is going to have a field day with this one. I continue my once-over, her tight jeans accentuating her rocking little figure. She rests one hand on her hip and sighs.
"This is heavy. Can you let me in?"
I look at her other hand. She's carrying some type of large contraption, and it's making noise. "Do I know you?"
"Of course you do,"
she says with such confidence that I push the door wider, allowing her to step in. As she walks by, I notice the contraption is actually carrying a baby. This chick brought her kid to my house? I certainly hope I didn't tell her I'd babysit. I know I was drinking last night, but pretty sure I'd remember offering to change diapers. I follow her into the living room. She sits down on the couch and leaves her baby in the carry thing on the floor. I stand, across from her, against the wall, still not sure if I know this woman.
"Do you remember me?"
I shake my head.
"No, you probably don't. You were pretty hammered."
"I don't get hammered," I say in response to her statement. That is the one thing I've prided myself on, not drinking myself into a stupor. People make stupid decisions when they've been drinking.
"Well, you were that night."
"What's your name?" I'm quickly realizing that I've made a mistake letting her into my house.
"Alicia."
"Alicia what?"
"Tucker. Alicia Tucker. We met about 10 months ago."
I'm not stupid. I can do the math. I know it takes 9 months for a baby to do its thing.
"Looks like you've been busy since we met,"
This comment causes her to rip her sunglasses off her eyes. If looks could kill, I'd be dead right about now, and she'd be cleaning out my checking account.
We met 10 months ago after one of your shows. I was backstage, and we went to the bar. I bought you a drink, and you brought me back here.
Okay. I'm not sure what else to say. I can only imagine what happened when we came back here, and sad to say it, but it wasn't memorable.
Anyway, this, she points to the carrier on the floor, is yours.
The last two words hang in the air. I heard her loud and clear. I don't need her to repeat herself. I look at her and the carrier. The baby is mostly covered, except the face. I don't know if it's a boy or a girl. I really don't care. This chick is nuts. I always wrap my junk. What makes you think he's mine?
Because we slept together and I got pregnant.
Not possible. I don't drink so I can avoid situations like this. I always wrap my junk. Your kid isn't mine.
It is.
It? Do you not know what you gave birth to? She rolls her eyes and places her hands on her hips. I stare at her, not willing to give an inch. Her phone rings. She takes it out and looks at it, smiling. How can she be smiling? This isn't anything to smile about. She's blaming her mistake on me. She pockets her phone and looks at me.
Listen, I had a crush on you. I went to your show, got backstage, and met you. I bought you a drink, and we ended up here. I'm sure you're smart enough to figure it out.
What are you thinking about, Dad? I blink a few times, wondering why I was remembering the day he came to me. Not much, bud. We should probably get going. He nods and climbs off the bed. I watch as he moves around the room with ease. He's so used to this life, and I sort of hate that for him. We arrive at the venue in time for soundcheck. The artist who is opening for us finishes as we arrive. The kid shakes our hands, raves about our music, and goes on and on about how thankful he is. I leave Liam and Caitlin to talk to him, although I want Caitlin to come with me. I could show her how to play the drums while she sits on my lap. I hate what she's wearing. Her skirt is shorter, and her shirt is one of our band shirts. I want to tear it to shreds so I can get to what she's hiding underneath. And that skirt would look fine on my floor, or up around her waist. I start my sound check, playing a few of the first few bars of our songs, so Tyler can figure everything out. This will be his first major gig, and I'd like to make sure it goes off without a hitch. Liam finally joins us on stage and starts going through his list of requirements. He sings the first verse of each song on our set list for tonight. For the most part, soundcheck goes fairly well. It was Tyler who didn't like the way a few of the songs sounded, but the adjustments were made, and we finished in time for the doors to open. I walk out front and check in with Luke at the merchandise table. I hadn't had an opportunity to see everything that Caitlin ordered for our shows. We have the standard band shirts with our new album cover, keychains, lanyards, and 5 different images of me, Liam, and JD. This is new. Usually it's just been Liam on the images, but now it's all 3 of us. I have to say, I like that she's included JD and me. I look up when my name is called. A few girls start coming toward me, but it's not them who catch my attention. It's Caitlin. She's looking for me. I can't help but grin from ear to ear as I walk toward her.
Chapter 6. Caitlin. I should have an IV drip of coffee inserted deep into my veins today. I don't know if I can do this. Liam made everything sound so easy, and yet here I am about to jump off a cliff because I haven't a clue as to what's going on. At first, when I opened the dressing room door, I thought this was normal. This being red roses everywhere. We are talking on every surface. I thought this venue was just being nice. A bit over the top, yes, but ass-kissing nice, nonetheless.
That was until I heard the yelling, followed by the breaking of glass. I've never been in a violent home. My father dotes on my mother, who would rather have something on her body lifted than to raise her voice. And Mason, he never raised his voice unless he was yelling at the TV. So this bone-chilling sensation running down my spine is rather unnerving. And honestly, I'm a little freaked out and afraid to open the door. I breathe in deeply and try to center myself. If it's Peyton or Elle yelling on the other side of the door, I can handle it for the most part because I know what is causing their turmoil. But Liam? I can't fathom. The sight before me is pure anguish. Liam is throwing vase after vase against the wall, a string of profanities accompanying each shattering vase. Josie has her hands up, begging him to stop. And me? I'm standing in the room, not knowing what to do. Jimmy runs by me, stepping in front of Liam and pushing him back into the chair. Josie rushes over to him, crying. She holds him like something has hurt him purposely.
"Caitlin, go and find Harrison,"
Jimmy says, heavily, clearly out of breath. I look at Liam and Josie. Neither of them are paying attention to me, and then back at Jimmy, who signals for me to go. I turn and leave, holding my clipboard to my chest, while I try and figure out where in the hell I can find Harrison. I search the stage. I ask Tyler if he's seen him. I knock on Devon's door, but he's not there. The bathroom turns up nothing. He's not in the green room with the kids, but Quinn says he likes to see what the fans are buying. Lovely. I take Quinn's advice and finally head out to the concourse and see him immediately. You can't miss the beanie. It doesn't matter what color it is. I'd spot it anywhere.
Harrison!
I say, not loudly enough. I guess I'm secretly hoping he won't hear me and I can go back to Jimmy and tell him to find Harrison himself. But he turns, as do the heads of the women near him. He's probably getting their phone numbers for later. He keeps his head down when he walks toward me. For the briefest second, I want him to look up so I can see his green eyes. Or are they blue today? I shake my head. I can't believe I even know that about him. That's crossing so many lines. I don't think I'll ever be ready to cross any line, especially with him. Harrison stops in front of me. His hands are pushed into the pockets of his cargo shorts. He's wearing black combat boots today. They are unlaced, and if this was Peyton, I'd be on my knees tying them up for her. His black, nondescript shirt accentuates his defined biceps. He's not built like Mason. Mason was muscular, always working out. He didn't need to flex to show off his muscles. They were there for everyone to see. Mason would have never covered his body in ink. Not like Harrison. I can't see the skin on his arms without seeing ink. No, Harrison is nothing like Mason. At the last moment, he looks up, and I wish he hadn't because now I don't know what to say. His eyes, they're baby blue with a hint of green today, and are being overshadowed by his long eyelashes. I can't look at him. When I do, I can't think. And I need to think. I shake my head and rub my temple.
"Are you okay?"
he asks, and I wish that he didn't. I don't want him to talk. Not right now. "Jimmy said to get you. I don't know what happened, but Liam, he's upset and throwing the vases against the wall." Harrison looks down the corridor and back at me. I know he's curious, but I don't have the answers for him. I have honestly never seen Liam like that, and only read about divas and their dressing rooms. I didn't expect Liam to be one. Harrison motions for me to go, but I shake my head. I don't want him behind me. I fumble too much when he's around, and I don't know why. I certainly don't want to snag my heel on a step and fall on my face. I'll gladly walk behind him. And now that I'm behind him, I wish I wasn't. I'm staring. I can't help it. Once again, the tattoo on his calf is begging for me to look at it. My mind wants to know what it is. But my mouth is definitely not going to ask. If the two of those would get in sync, I'd greatly appreciate it. We arrive at their dressing room. Harrison doesn't knock. I suppose he doesn't really have to, does he? He swings the door open with a, "What the fuck are you doing?" blurting out too loudly for my taste. Jimmy is leaning against the wall, shaking his head. Liam is sitting in a chair with Josie rubbing his shoulders. I'm not sure I'd be touching him if I was her. But there she is, standing by her man.
"Why are there roses in here?"
Harrison is looking at me like I know the answer. I shrug and look at everyone else in the room.
Why did you add roses to the rider? Didn't I tell you? No flowers?